Today on Face the Nation, Hurricane Irene slams the East Coast, leaving at least 9 dead and nearly 3 million people without electricity, and New York City is next. The monster storm, 480 miles wide, hit land first in North Carolina, then roared up the East Coast, roughing up the most heavily populated region of the country. As they waited for the storm, New Yorkers partied in Times Square, but the streets are all but deserted now as the storm gets closer. There's flooding from the Carolinas to Delaware, 9,000 flights have been canceled, and train service along most of the East Coast has been shut down. We'll hear from our correspondents all along the coast, and General Colin Powell is with us in the studio to talk about what was supposed to happen this weekend but didn't, the dedication of the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial. He'll also talk some politics and give us his reaction to former Vice President Cheney's explosive new book. It's all ahead on Face the Nation.
From CBS News in Washington, Face the Nation with Bob Schieffer.
And good morning again. General Powell is in the studio with us this morning. Good morning, General. First, we're going to talk about the storm, though. The hurricane is now Tropical Storm Irene, but she is barreling into New York at this hour, and there's still concern of flooding and high winds, and our team of correspondents is deployed all along the path of the storm. We're beginning this morning, though, with the man we've been depending on since the beginning of this storm, meteorologist and CBS News hurricane consultant David Bernard in Miami. Well, Dave, just bring us up to speed. Where are we on this thing and what happens next?
All right. Good morning, Bob. This is the latest that we have from the National Hurricane Center. As you mentioned, a tropical storm now, 65-mile-per-hour winds, generally right over New York City, moving north-northeast at 26 miles per hour. Now, the heaviest rain is lifting north of New York and Philadelphia, New England, and also upstate New York. That's where the heaviest rain is probably going to be for the rest of the day. And in fact, that's where we're likely to see some more flooding problems. Some areas could still get an additional 6 inches of rain between now and tomorrow morning as the storm finally moves out to the northeast. Now, since midnight, we've had some wind gusts to around 60 in New York City, also in Bridgeport, Connecticut, Baltimore 51, Montauk 40, and so far in Boston, only a wind gust of around 40 miles per hour. But look how big the wind field is right now. A lot of tropical storm force winds, Bob, are still going to be spreading across New England throughout the day, so the danger is not quite over yet.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Dave, and we appreciate all the good work you've been doing all week. Thank you so much. Byron Pitts is in Long Beach, New York, which is out on Long Island. Well, Byron, this has been downgraded to a tropical storm, but it looks like you still got a pretty good breeze out there.
Hey, Bob, that's absolutely right. We've had wind gusts of north of 50 miles an hour this morning. We got our first taste of Irene at about 6 o'clock this morning, and it's got steadily worse. This is actually a bit of a lull now. We've had moments where there have been downpours. The beach is over that way. There's this beautiful, pristine beach about 100 yards wide that normally separates the ocean from the boardwalk. Now that ocean is covered with water. One of the concerns here, Bob, is flooding because of the storm surge. Long Beach is only about 3 feet above water. This so far today, we've heard about 160,000 power outages along Long Island. In Long Beach, it hasn't been as bad. I talked to the city manager, who said they've had a few trees down. You know, you'll see this kind of debris on the ground scattered about, but nothing major. I saw a motorcycle turned over. We've seen our share of looky-loos this morning. There's a guy over here who's on his bicycle riding around. Hey, man.
What's up, brother?
What brings you on a day like this, man? I'm out here because I have to be. Where are you at?
Just came to check it out. Once in a lifetime chance to see this, so, you know.
Okay. All right. Sure, man. Thank you so much. We've heard that kind of comments from a lot of the young people we've talked to out here today. In New York City, conditions are about the same at this hour. About 40,000 people in New York are without electricity. There's been a storm surge in New York Harbor of about 4 feet. New York evacuated about 137,000 people in the low-lying sections of Manhattan. And and the other boroughs because of concerns about flooding. And Bob, that's the big worry to this point. As for folks on the street, people are, for the most part, looking around, seeing what they can see. In New York, we saw people playing slip and slide. To this point, it hasn't been as bad as predicted. But again, the big concern the rest of the day will be flooding.
Okay. Well, Byron, thank you very much. And if you just do one thing, stay on foot. I don't think it's quite time to get on the bike yet. But thanks a lot, Byron.
All right. Thanks.
All right. CBS News national correspondent Chip Reed is in Ocean City, Maryland this morning. We're trying to taking the path of the storm backwards. He is not on a bicycle this morning. Chip, what's the latest down there?
Well, Bob, I tell you, yesterday when we looked south, we thought we saw doom coming in the direction of Ocean City, Maryland. You look down there now and you can see little slivers of blue sky. In fact, this city has already been, and at noon it's supposed to open up to tourists and vacationers. They want the people back. 200,000 people went over the bridges from this narrow barrier island over recent days, and now they want them back as quickly as they can get them back here. A lot of people, a lot of business owners around here are very irked that they were sent away in the first place because they are now saying, well, I told you so, this wasn't going to be a big storm. But the mayor vigorously defends his decision. He says that if there had been huge numbers of people here with the strong winds, it certainly would have been a much more dangerous situation. The mayor's bottom line is he says that they didn't just dodge a bullet, they dodged a missile. Bob?
I'm kind of with the mayor on that. Thank you very much, Chip. CBS News correspondent Mark Strassman is on the Outer Banks of North Carolina. Of course, that's where Act One of all this began when the storm made its first landfall there. So I take it things are looking a little better down there this morning, too. Right, Mark?
Right, Bob, much better. In fact, Irene was just not the knockout punch that many people even here had been afraid of. These barrier islands actually came out of this pretty well, proving once again they can take a punch. Impressively so when you consider how ferociously and ominously Irene first came ashore with winds of 115 miles per hour. The storm churned here for about 12 hours. I was still hearing it last night in my room. And the storm system also dropped about 7 inches of rain here, which is why flooding, along with the rain, the storm surge, the flooding is now the big issue, of course. And on the west side of these barrier islands, there is some flooding and there is some damage. A lot of folks today woke up to discover they have a major cleanup ahead of them. In some cases, they have a basement to pump out. But all in all, they really feel okay about this. In fact, Bob, if the rest of the East Coast comes out of this as well as these barrier islands did, they should consider themselves lucky.
Well, that is just amazing. Well, thank you. Thank you so much, Mark. CBS News will present a one-hour special anchored by Scott Pelley just after the conclusion of Face the Nation today. And now I want to turn from what is happening and the storm to what was supposed to happen, and that is the dedication of the memorial honoring the late Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Tens of thousands of people were expected to turn out here in Washington to honor Dr. King on this, the 48th anniversary of his I Have a Dream speech. General Colin Powell was instrumental in getting that memorial built, and he's with us this morning to talk about that and some other things, too. General Powell, welcome. General, you were very instrumental in getting this memorial built and done. I think you raised yourself over $1 million for this.
I was pleased to serve on the leadership committee. Many people contributed to it, and my contribution was relatively modest compared to what others did. But it was an important memorial to build.
I wanted to ask you this, a more personal question. What did Martin Luther King Jr. mean to you?
He meant a great deal to me. You know, when he gave that famous speech, I was serving in Vietnam. When he was killed several years later, I was training to go back to Vietnam. But for most of that period, I was away from the country. My wife and young children were in Birmingham, Alabama during those terrible days in 1963. And what Dr. King meant to me was that the second revolution, the second civil war was underway. It was time now to meet the dream set out for us by our founding fathers. And what Dr. King did was not just free African Americans. He freed all of America. He caused us, through his sacrifice and his service, he caused America to look at a mirror of itself. Look in that mirror. What do you see? Is this who we want to be? Is this the inspiration we want to be to the rest of the world? And the answer was no. And we knew we had to change. And he was the leader who took us through that change. And that's why it's so fitting that he be memorialized in this manner.
Do you feel that his dream has now been realized?
Now, if Dr. King was here now, he would be raging about poverty. He would be raging about inequalities in our society. He would be raging about the fact that we are not educating all of our youngsters, and especially our African-American youngsters. He'd also be chewing them out a bit, saying, you know, you've got to work harder to get your education. We have to bring back intact families so we can raise children in loving, intact families. And he would also be on the world stage talking about poverty and inequality throughout the world. He was a man who transcended the African-American experience. He became an American icon, and he became an icon of the rest of the world.
Dr. King and his era, it was a tough time for America. But we're going through some more tough times right now. What do you think he would think of today's politics?
He'd be very disappointed. I mean, we have such a lack of civility in our political life now. We are fixed on ideological poles, and we seem unable to come together. And what Dr. King was always saying, can't we come together? Can't we talk about these issues? And our founding fathers argued with each other, but they also knew that argument was part of the democratic process. But ultimately, you have to compromise with each other in order to reach a consensus to keep the country moving forward. And if all we do is remain fixed on these polar opposites of our political spectrum, the country will not be moving forward. And we have got to find a way to get through this. And it's going to happen when the American people say, knock it off, stop it. And we want to see a different attitude with respect to our political life. We want to see a different level of civility in Washington, D.C.
General, we're going to take a break here. And when we come back, I want to get your reaction to this explosive book by former Vice President Dick Cheney, who had some rather surprising remarks about, among other people, you. We'll talk about that and some more things when we come back.
It slices, it dices. With razor-like edges that never need sharpening, it's not a blender, it's not a set of steak knives, it's Car Windshield. And now, it can be yours. Here's how. Next time you're in a car and the driver's driving recklessly, simply say nothing. That's right. Let them change CDs. Let them text on their phones. Ignore that little voice in your head that's trying to warn you. And you too can experience Car Windshield. Passengers who have tried Car Windshield agree. It's a smash. Car Windshield may not be for everyone, as it can lead to severe side effects and even death. Please consult your physician after you've experienced Car Windshield. Passengers who wish to avoid Car Windshield can do so by following simple steps, like trusting their instincts, speaking up, and telling their friends to slow down.
In the real world, there is no spokesperson to prevent reckless driving. There's only you. Speak up.
Act now. Paramedics are standing by.
This has been a message from the Ad Council. For more information, go to youarethespokesperson.com.
And we're back now with former Secretary of State Colin Powell. We want to talk a little politics and talk a little bit about this book that Dick Cheney himself said is going to cause heads all over Washington to explode. I guess I'd ask you, General, is your head exploding?
My head isn't exploding, and I haven't noticed any other heads exploding in Washington, D.C., and the explosive part of the book is what Mr. Cheney says is explosive, but from what I've read in the newspapers and seen on television, it's essentially a rehash of events of 7 or 8 years ago. What really sort of got my attention was this way in which he characterized it. It's going to cause heads to explode. That's quite a visual. And in fact, the kind of headline I would expect to come out of a gossip columnist or the kind of headline you might see one of the supermarket tabloids, right? It's not the kind of headline I would have expected to come from a former vice president of the United States of America. Mr. Cheney has had a long and distinguished career, and I hope in his book that's what he will focus on, not these cheap shots that he's taking at me and other members of the administration who served to the best of our ability for President Bush.
So you just label them flatly cheap shots.
Well, yeah, they are cheap shots. I mean, several of the ones he tosses at me, you know, he takes great credit for my resignation in 2004. Well, President Bush and I had always agreed that I would leave at the end of 2004 after the election. I stayed on for 3 more months because I wanted to and because there were some conferences that I wanted to attend and because Dr. Rice hadn't been confirmed. So there's no news there. He says that I went out of my way not to present my positions to the president, but to take them outside of the administration. That's nonsense. The president knows that I told him what I thought about every issue of the day. Mr. Cheney may forget that I'm the one who said to President Bush, if you break it, you own it. And you have got to understand that if we have to go to war in Iraq, we have to be prepared for the whole war, not just the first phase. And Mr. Cheney and many of his colleagues did not prepare for what happened after the fall of Baghdad. And I persuaded the president to take the case to the United Nations to see if it could be solved without war. And if it couldn't be solved without war, we would have people aligned with us. Mr. Cheney went out immediately after the president made that decision and undercut it by giving two speeches to two veterans groups that essentially said he didn't believe it would work. That's not the way you support a president. Then he also says that, I was not supportive of the president's positions. Well, who went to the United Nations and regrettably with a lot of false information? It was me. It wasn't Mr. Cheney. I supported the president. I support the president's decisions. I gave the president my best advice. And then he goes on to talk about the Valerie Plame affair and tries to lay it all off on Mr. Rich Armitage and the State Department and me. But the fact of the matter is, when Mr. Armitage realized that he was the source for Bob Novak's column that caused all the difficulty, and he called me immediately 2 days after the president launched the investigation. And what we did was we called the Justice Department. They sent over the FBI. The FBI had all the information about Mr. Armitage's participation in this immediately, and we called Al Gonzalez, the president's counsel, and told him that we had information. The FBI asked us not to share any of this with anyone else, as did Mr. Gonzalez. And so if the White House operatives had come forward as readily as Mr. Armitage had done, then we wouldn't have gone on for two more months with the FBI trying to find out what happened in the White House. There wouldn't have been a special counsel appointed by the Justice Department who spent 2 years trying to get to the bottom of it, and we wouldn't have had the mess that we subsequently had. And so if the White House and the operatives in the White House on Mr. Cheney's staff and elsewhere in the White House had been as forthcoming with the FBI as Mr. Armitage was, this problem would not have reached the dimensions that it reached. But Mr. Cheney is free to say what he wishes, but so far I haven't seen anything in it that is as explosive as he claims it is, and I don't see any heads laying on the street.
Well, do you think, it was no secret that you often disagreed with the vice president, as there are always disagreements within any administration.
And I think what Mr. Cheney should let us see is the nature of those disagreements. And he should say why he disagreed with me, and he should at least indicate why I was disagreeing with him, and not just dismiss it with a wave of his hand and a barb that is intended to cause heads to explode rather than to illuminate the issue.
I just want to put up on the screen that one quote, because you referred to it. This is the quote, one of the quotes in the book, and he says flatly, talking about you, it was as though he thought the proper way to express his views was by criticizing administration policy to people outside the government.
Did he indicate anything in that paragraph or in that section about what I did? I gave my best advice to him, to my colleagues in the National Security Council, and above all to the President of the United States of America. And he can't dismiss all of that with that kind of observation.
What do you think happened here? I mean, clearly you had disagreements, but this seems, reading this book, this seems to go beyond disagreement. It seems to be anger here.
Well, I'm not going to attribute any emotion to Mr. Cheney in the writing of his book, but it was clear by 2004 that the team was not functioning as a team. And we had different views, and not just views that, and not views that could be reconciled. And so I said to the president that I would be leaving at the end of the year after the election, and he ought to take a look at his whole team to try to resolve these issues, because it was not a smoothly functioning team at that point. And I think that's unfortunate, but it's the reality. And I felt that I had to leave the administration, and frankly, I always intended to just serve one term.
Did the conversations, the atmosphere within the White House while you were there, how would you characterize it? I mean, obviously there were disagreements, but were these angry disagreements?
No.
Because I know he, in some ways, he's no kinder to your successor, Condoleezza Rice.
Well, he's taken the same. He's taken the same shots at Condi with an almost condescending tone. She tearfully did this or that. And he's taken the same shots at George Tenet, and he has also, in some ways, indicated he didn't always approve of what President Bush was deciding. And there's nothing wrong with saying you disagree, but there's not, it's not necessary to take these kind of barbs and then try to pump a book up by saying heads will be exploding. That's even on the headline section of the Nixon Foundation to sell the book. So I think it's a bit too far. I think Dick overshot the runway with that kind of comment, and if that's how he plans to sell his book. He's had a long and distinguished life and career, and I hope that's what the book focuses on and not these kinds of things.
Well, I mean, but was there that kind of atmosphere while this administration was underway?
Did we have heated arguments? Sure. Did we have heated debates? Yes. But it was mostly civil. And everybody tends to focus on Iraq and Afghanistan. But there's so many other things that were going. The president's emergency plan on AIDS relief. The manner in which we increased funding for Africa and other parts of the world. We got a lot done in the administration, a lot of things that we can be proud and successful of, and that were successful. And we also got rid of a horrible regime called the Taliban and a horrible dictator by the name of Saddam Hussein.
Let me ask you a little bit about politics. You voted for Barack Obama last time out, even though you are a Republican. Are you going to vote for him again?
I haven't decided who I'm going to vote for. Just as was the case in 2008, I'm going to watch the campaign unfold. In the course of my life, I have voted for Democrats. I have voted for Republicans. I have changed from one four-year cycle to another, and I've always felt that it is my responsibility as a citizen to take a look at the issues, to examine the candidates, and pick the person that I think is best qualified for the office of the president in that year, and not just solely on the basis of party affiliation.
Anybody on the Republican side that has leaped up that you see as...
I think there are some interesting candidates, but I don't think any one of them has really emerged into the leading position. And if you follow the press and the polls, every 3 days, it's another leader on the Republican side. So let's see if anybody else is going to join, and we've got a long way to go.
All right. General Powell, it's always a pleasure to have you.
Thank you, Bob.
So much for being with us
Thank
today.
You.
I'll be back with a final thought.
Come on.
Laptops, MP3 players, cameras, video games, cell phones. In times like these, schools can become a shopping mall for thieves.
Got it.
Don't become a victim of crime. Leave your valuable stuff at home, and if you do have to bring them to school, keep them with you. Write down their serial numbers, and don't flash expensive items around. Be smart. If you have something cool, there's a good chance someone else will want it too. Keep cash and ATM cards in a secure place, and never give anyone your PIN number. And don't leave your school bag lying around where it can become a temptation to someone else. If you have something stolen, report the situation immediately. The sooner you tell someone, the better the chance you'll get it back. Visit ncpc.org to learn more about how to prevent school theft. That's ncpc.org. A message from the U.S. Department of Justice, National Crime Prevention Council, and the Ad Council.
This heavyweight bout is about to begin.
What's the champ wearing? Looks like an examination gown. And from the back...
Ooh, that's not pretty.
Champ, what's with the get-up?
I've got to take care of my family, so I'm getting those important medical screens.
The fight is over! Champ, you look pretty healthy out there tonight.
But I'm still getting those tests. For a list of tests you need, go to ahrq.gov. And remember, real men wear gowns.
Go to ahrq.gov. This message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AHRQ, and the Ad Council.
One of the few times we are aware of movement is when it suddenly stops. Multiple sclerosis stops people from moving. We exist to make sure it doesn't. With the help of people like you, the National MS Society addresses the challenges of each person whose life is affected by MS and helps them stay connected to the great big moving world. Join the movement at nationalmssociety.org.
Finally today, it was to have been a wonderful day in Washington where people from all over the country were gathering to honor the legacy of Martin Luther King Jr. on the anniversary of his I Have a Dream speech. But that was all blown away, canceled as the hurricane roared through, reminding us that for all our ingenuity, we still cannot control the power and the force of nature. So the massive statue stood alone in the storm to be dedicated and celebrated another day. An organizer of the event called postponing the dedication heartbreaking. And while disappointing to so many who had worked so hard, no celebration was really necessary. As Lincoln said of Gettysburg, those who died there consecrated it far above our poor power to add or detract. King's great work requires no ceremony or validation. It is celebrated every time an American child is born to enjoy and take for granted a freedom so wrongly once denied. The storm will pass and the King Memorial will take its place among the great monuments of Washington, which are, after all, the index of our nation's values. Those we honor remind us and tell others who we are and what we hold to be important. But the monuments are only reminders. Each of us builds our own memorial by the work we do and the life we lead. The storm reminded us of the power of nature, but King's work showed that the power of the human spirit is even greater. Back in a minute.
Hello, my name is Jeffrey, but people in this town call me Maniac. They call me that because I'm the fastest runner in town. But just because everyone knows who I am doesn't mean I belong. I don't really belong anywhere. You see, I'm an orphan, and I wander the streets just looking for a place that I can truly call home. My name is Maniac McGee, and I'm all alone. Explore new worlds. Read my story in the novel Maniac McGee by Jerry Spinelli. For other great book ideas, visit your local library or log on to literacy.gov. Brought to you by the Library of Congress and the Ad Council.
Hey, Dad.
Yeah?
You remember that ball game we went to a couple years ago?
Sure.
And how you didn't have enough cash for 2 hot dogs, so you walked with me on your shoulders until we found an ATM? And then when we got back to our seats, we never saw the hot dog guy again.
Well, I don't remember all that.
Yeah, that was an awesome game.
You never know which moments will be the ones they'll remember forever. So take time to be a dad today. Learn more at 1-877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
That's it for us. Stay tuned to CBS News for the latest on Hurricane Irene. We will see you right here next week.
Morning, gentlemen. Want to hear our specials?
Sure.
First, we have the seafood special. It's been sitting around here for a week. We're known around these parts for our food poisoning.
Wouldn't it be great if you could be warned of life's risks? If you have diabetes, you can. It's called A1C, a simple blood test that can help measure your risk of complications from diabetes. To find out more, go to www.diabetesa1c.org. Brought to you by the American Diabetes Association, Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation International, and the Ad Council.
Fairy residence, Tooth speaking. Sorry, there's no credit fairy here. What's that? He magically raises your credit score? Yeah, there's no credit fairy. But you can improve your credit by paying bills on time and keeping your credit card balances low. Money under your pillow? Sorry, kids only.
There's no magic to improving your credit, but there is help, and it's free. Go to creditfairy.org. Brought to you by the Consumer Bankers Foundation, the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights Education Fund, and the Ad Council.
Amber Alert, abducted child, African-American girl, 6 years old, suspect wearing blue shirt, black jeans.
Now when an Amber Alert is issued, you can get the same information the authorities get right on your cell phone. Sign up for free at wirelessamberalerts.org. Think of it, something as simple as a free text message could free an abducted child.
All units Amber Alert canceled. Child recovered safely. Suspect is in custody.
Wirelessamberalerts.org. A child is calling for help. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
This has been Face the Nation with CBS News Chief Washington Correspondent Bob Schieffer. Today's guest was former Secretary of State Colin Powell. The executive producer of Face the Nation is Mary Hager. The senior producer is Rob Hendon, and the associate producer is Emily Bradley. This broadcast was directed by Steve Besner. Face the Nation originates from CBS News in Washington. You can follow Face the Nation, Bob Schieffer, and CBS Radio News on Twitter and Facebook.